Welcome to the number one podcast covering Michigan State basketball. The Final Four is not in the schedule. Join Rod and me, Eric, as we dive deep into the Spartans to get you prepared for every game. Subscribe today for in-depth recruiting updates and fantastic interviews with today's important college basketball personalities like Robbie Hummel.
Thanks for having me. I have listened to your guys' podcast numerous times on drives throughout any Midwestern Big Ten city, so I am big fans of your guys' work.
Jay Billis.
And next time, hey, if anybody in Michigan wants a December tea time, call me. You wimps won't show up, but I'll be there. I'll be there and play in the cold. And Izzo will be in front of the fire with hot chocolate.
Coaches Thomas Kelly.
No problem. Glad to be back, man. Glad to be back.
Mike Garland.
Just can't sit there and trade twos for threes. You can't do it. You're going to lose. Coming down the stretch, you're going to lose.
And more. You won't find better coverage of Spartan hoops than you will get here. For both the casual and hardcore fan, come along as we take you for a green and white ride. Hey everybody, it's Eric alongside Rod, and once again, our favorite bracketologist, Dom Lease from Bracketometry.com, also at Twitter, at BracketDom. He's America's number one bracketology site and is ranked by the Bracket Matrix. So welcome back to the Final Fours on the Schedule, Dom.
How's it going? Thanks for having me back.
Great, thanks for coming back. So before we begin, a quick update that we have our winner for the Beat Rod Big Ten Standings Contest, and the winner was Roger Bronsink, who scored 39 points. And second place was Brian McClure with 40. So walk away with the prize money from Nudge Printing. If you're curious, you can head over to the website, go to the contest tab to check out the final standings where you ended up. Rod finished with 60, so that just gives you an idea.
To be fair, a lot of that, not all of it, but a lot of that came from Michigan State. So
yeah, well, yeah. And I will say that the lowest score was 60, so...
Oh, well, there we go. Great.
So now...
Congrats.
You're
to me.
Yeah, you're...
Well, I also missed heavily on Nebraska and Northwestern, too.
Well, yes. In your defense, you had to make the predictions in July or August before any games had been played.
Right.
That's true. Now, I probably shouldn't mention that I scored 42, but I won't mention that.
Okay.
Because,
let's get on with the show.
Yeah, right. So before, be sure to head over to the website, go to the contest tab to register for a bracket challenge. Rod and I will be on there for, and along with our sponsors, probably Dom will get him to come on.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So if last year's any indication, Dom is a much better bracketologist than a prognosticator, which actually goes for all three, of us. So I don't think any of us did really well last year. So, all right, so Dom, first question here. Is there any way we can get you to replace Jerry Palm on CBS? I mean, he's ranked towards the bottom of predictors, and I mean, to be honest, he's not very photogenic, so I don't really know how he gets the job. What can we do and our listeners do to help get you that job?
I don't know, but if there's an answer and there's a way, please find that way. I would love to get on there, and I think CBS would probably like to have some credibility with the number one ranked bracketologist as opposed to the 100 and something.
Yes, right. I mean, I don't get it.
I would assume that it's, as with a lot of these things, it's first mover advantage, right? So guys
sure.
Like Palm and Lunardi were very, very early on the bracketology thing. And
exactly.
So they've established as names, but we've now obviously gotten to a point that there are people who are able to be much more sophisticated about how they analyze this stuff than the originators are. Because Lunardi's another one. I mean, he generally, my recollection is he generally rates, you know, lower middle of the pack at best, right? I mean, usually where he sits.
He's not terrible at it by any means. And full props to him for creating this.
He deserved the
platform for coming up with the concept, without a doubt. I'm not saying get him out of there, but...
Right.
Yeah. And Jerry Palm, he didn't create it like Lunardi did. He's ranked lower than him. Maybe Bracket Dom comes into CBS. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. We always see the hat on, but you've got to have better hair than Jerry Palm. I mean, that's some bad hair. So
yeah, I'm wearing a hat right now, so maybe not, man.
All right, so unfortunate for Dom, your Texas State Wildcats were knocked out of the conference tournament, but that doesn't mean you're not watching everything else that's going on. We just actually were talking off air that we were watching the Oakland game as Oakland snatched the Horizon League. So they're actually go to the dance. So that I think they're like the eighth or ninth auto bid. But obviously, our focus here on the Final Fours on the schedule is Michigan State, which is determined to provide a free cardiac stress test for everybody this season. And so the first question, of course, is, you know, is Michigan State in the field? Do they have to win to get in the field? If they lose, are they out? Do they have to end the playing game? And then I guess the corollary of that is, can we look at what happened in Rutgers last year and Rutgers missed the tournament when most people had them in? You know, how much do we need to sweat as Michigan State fans coming to Thursday game or potentially even the Sunday selection show?
Yeah, I mean, I would say if you beat Minnesota in that first round game, you're in, and I'm not even sweating about it. If you lose, I still think you're in, but I'm going to still think you're in the same way I thought Rutgers was in last year, too. So I'd still like your chances with a loss, but it's one of those ones to where, would I be wrong about it? Not wrong often, but it's one that if it was the one I was wrong on, wouldn't stun me. So yeah, if you lose that one, probably sweat a little, but I still think you're probably in, maybe even avoid Dayton, but probably in Dayton with a loss.
Yeah, that's kind of been the way that I've seen it, is a loss probably puts you in Dayton, although, again, none of us are going to be feeling comfortable if MSU is going into Sunday on the back of a first-round or quarterfinal loss. I guess from first, what is the upside for Michigan State? Let's imagine, let's get into a real dream world for a second. And imagine that Michigan State not only beats Minnesota, and I guess as a side note, for metric purposes, for classification purposes, does this game against Minnesota count as a road game or a neutral game?
It's a neutral game, and that it would be a Q2 game. So it would certainly, right now you're 5-5 in Q2. So win that game, it gets you back above 500 in Q2, which is something that makes that team sheet look a lot nicer. So it's Q1 win, but one that would certainly help.
It doesn't really matter then if it was classified as a road game versus a neutral site game, because it's Q2 either way, right?
Exactly. Yeah. So I'll have to check again and make sure, since the tournament's in Minnesota. I mean, I know St. John's, they're counting their games as home games in the Big East. So
see, that's what I'm thinking. I mean, this is
their campus is a few miles away.
So yeah. The reason I raise this is, you know, Michigan State beat Baylor in Detroit in December, and I believe that's classified as a neutral site game. But my assumption is it's because it's, you know, it's not at another venue in East Lansing. It's in another city, you know, 90 some miles away.
But exactly.
This is in the same city, different venue, but the same city that the school resides in. So I was just curious what the classification was on that.
And actually, that's a fantastic point. And I mean, that's something I should know the answer to coming into.
Well, I don't either. I thought you might.
It's one of those ones where after the game's final, I'll see on the team sheet which one it's popping up at and treat it accordingly. But like you did say, it's Q2 either way, since they're 86 in the net right now. So won't make a massive difference. But if it's credited as a road game, that would certainly help, maybe just a little.
Yeah. The second part of my question was, let's go to dreamland for a second and assume that Michigan State not only wins the Minnesota game, but somehow beats Purdue in the next round, I guess would be the quarterfinal, right?
Right. Yeah.
What's the upside? And let's further assume, go on from there, give Michigan State the best case, they get to the finals. What would the seeding upside be? Would you see any world where that would get them a 9 or even an 8? Or is that pretty much a 9 kind of the ceiling?
Oh, not at all. I mean, it really just comes down to how much the committee puts weight into the conference tournament, which they're always very inconsistent about.
Yeah.
If you were to get neutral wins over Purdue and over Northwestern, I mean, if you told me the committee then would fully factor those in, I don't even think a 7 would be completely out of the possibility.
That's interesting.
But again, that would mean you win those games and the committee gives you full credit for them.
Right.
So maybe an 8, but
right. And that's, you know, Michigan State's in this interesting scenario where you certainly want to win that Minnesota game to take any doubt out of the equation, right?
But yeah.
I think the worry is among some people, if you do well enough, and maybe even that one win would be enough to get them to a 9, then you're looking at, you know, a potential second round game against a 1 seed. Whereas if you stay in that 10th spot, you're probably looking at a more favorable second round matchup. So it's kind of a difficult spot to know what to root for in terms of how many wins in this thing. Because if you could get all the way up to a 7, well, great. You're still talking about a potential second round game against a 2 seed, which is the best they're going to do. Although I guess unless they were an 11, that would be the ironic thing. If they were an 11, they would be in the same spot, right? Yeah. So you just
the
want to avoid.
Better.
I guess my point is you just want to avoid that 8-9. And I'm one. I don't know how you feel about it, but my feeling this year is very similar to the way I felt last year, which is I think seeding matters less and less with every passing year. But there is an argument to say, well, that Purdue, Houston, UConn, Troika is one you'd rather avoid in the second
First
round. Year. Yeah. But everybody else, it's kind of, you know, I think we're going to see a tournament. I think very possible we see a tournament much like we did last year where 1 seeds just are not getting through. But those 3 do kind of stand out. So I was just curious how you felt about that. So it sounds like you don't even think a 7 would be completely off the table if they really went on a run.
Absolutely not. Yeah. I mean, I think if they go to the final, like I said, if the committee, I mean, their metrics are already amazing. So if they're giving them credit for picking up 2 more
wins,
especially one over Purdue, which is very good. And then maybe still need a little bit of help from some other teams above them, maybe losing not, but yeah, a 7 wouldn't stun me at all getting that Purdue one, but then you probably do have to make the final after that and back it up and not then just go back and lose to Western or Wisconsin, which would maybe get them right back locked into like the 8 seed range. So
that's the worry. You do some work, but not
too
quite
much.
Enough. Yeah. Not quite enough to get the upside benefit, but yeah, you've ended up doing too much. So anyway,
the advantage there is that if you end up as a 10 or as a 9, you can't play Purdue a second time in the tournament because you've already played them twice. So you don't get them in the first, you don't get them in the second round.
Exactly.
True. So then it's UConn or Houston you're drawn against, which I'm not sure is, I think would be worse, quite honestly.
Or Tennessee or North Carolina, whoever gets that last 1 seed.
I'd live with those teams. I mean, they're, you know, Tennessee in particular, I'm really impressed by. We saw them in an exhibition before the season started, and they're very, very impressive. But I'd take them over UConn or Houston at this point. But I guess we'll see.
Yeah, especially Tennessee's just so inconsistent. I think at their best, they're as good as those other top 3 1 seeds.
Agreed.
But they also just sometimes come out and it's just they can't hit a shot. And that happens more often than you think with them for being as good as they have been. So, I mean, I think Michigan State's a team that could frustrate them if that ended up being the matchup. So that's probably, if you end up in an 8-9 game, what Michigan State fans want to be rooting for being paired up with them as the 1 seed.
Right.
Yeah. Well, if there's one thing Michigan State knows how to do, it's to frustrate fans. So just like Tennessee, I suppose. So maybe they'll frustrate another team. So then looking at the broader Big Ten, I mean, we have, as far as locks, we have Purdue and Illinois, top 4 seeds, probably some, you know, Purdue's a 1, Illinois' top 4, probably. Wisconsin fading away, they're somewhere, they're the next probably high seed along with Nebraska and Northwestern. So those are like the 5, for sure, no matter what happens, they're in. Is that accurate?
Yeah, for sure. I would say Illinois, most likely a 4, maybe could work their way to a 3, especially with Kansas's injury concerns, maybe opening a spot in the 3 line. And then, yeah, the other ones, Wisconsin's probably like a 6 seed, somewhere around there. And Northwestern, Nebraska are kind of in the same boat as Michigan State, just maybe a little bit safer. Where there's a good chance they end up in those 8-9 games, but I think they're locks even if they were to lose that first one.
Yeah. So then the question is, you know, there are a number of teams that obviously have to win the whole thing in order to make the tournament. Who can win enough games but not win the whole thing and still make the tournament? I mean, are Iowa and Ohio State close enough that they could pull it off? And how many wins would they need?
I think those are the only two, and it's interesting that they play each other right out of the gate.
Yeah, right.
You might see Indiana's a 6 seed ahead of them, or like Minnesota's a 9, but I don't really see any path for either of them without winning at all. But yeah, as far as just a tournament resume goes, Iowa and Ohio State are definitely the ones that are right there in that next four out type range, where they would have to obviously win the game against each other. And at a minimum, then go on and beat Illinois. And I think then you start talking about, are they in? But I think they'd probably have to make a run all the way to the final and then hope the committee even cares about that win. So still slim chance for both of them. But if the winner of that game loses to Illinois, I think we're not, and Michigan State beats Minnesota, I don't think we're talking about any Big Ten teams on the bubble.
That's what I was going to follow that up with, is even if they make that kind of run, we're likely looking at them needing several teams in front of them losing and creating, right? And creating Absolutely. A situation where those wins are actually meaningful enough to allow them to vault enough teams. Because I've pretty consistently seen Iowa, it looks like, in next four out, not first four out.
Yeah.
And I'm not even seeing Ohio State very often. I'm not sure where you have them. I'm not even seeing Ohio State in next four outs.
He has them tied, I think, with Kansas State, okay. right? For the next, right. yeah. the last of the next okay. four.
Okay.
And it was almost even a three-way tie. I had like a clear 10 teams out that I thought had a chance, with Utah in that mix too. So, yeah, I mean, I was pretty firmly in that next four out, and then Ohio State's just kind of like, in that cluster of either the last team in the last four out. Yeah.
Okay. So then taking it out past the Big Ten, and I know we talked about this some last week, the national picture, but I just wanted to return to that for a second because I've seen it as a hot topic nationally. I think because the way the games were staggered, a lot of people saw the Missouri Valley title game over the weekend. And Indiana State, of course, lost that game to Drake, so Drake is in.
Woohoo!
Do you give it, what odds, and we're not going to hold you to this, but what odds would you give Indiana State at securing an at-large?
Well, you can hold me to it, because I'm not going to look bad either way, since I'm going to say it's 50-50. It's
that good.
Either way, it's like, oh, well, there's a 50% chance that was right or wrong, but I'll stand by that, yeah.
that's higher than the sense I've got from some other people, but that's interesting. So that, to me, seems, a very realistic chance that they managed to get their way into the field. Now, the criticism I've heard of them is on two fronts. One, they took a bad loss to, I think it was Southern Illinois. Illinois State. They took a bad loss to Illinois State. And then they don't really have the quad one kind of wins to hang their hats on to counteract that. So what is it? Oh, that's the negative side. What is it on the positive side, just besides the fact that they won a lot of games, that you think gives them a decent shot at pulling it off?
So, I mean, I guess it really just comes down to, when you look at the resume, and just they have a quad one win, they're 4-1 in quad two, only have the one bad loss, and they have pretty good metrics. This could come down to is then when you start looking at who those quad one and two wins are against, there's all against other Missouri Valley teams that aren't close to being tournament teams. So it's kind of, how does the committee view that? It's like, all right, the quadrant wins, say this is probably pretty close to being a tournament resume. But then if you just look at who those Q1 and 2 wins are against versus some of those other bubble teams who have Q1 and Q2 wins against other tournament teams, maybe they're going to start valuing that a little bit more, which could push them out. But again, their metrics are very good, which often is not the case when there's a mid-major team on the bubble. It's almost, they have some nice wins, but the metrics are terrible. Indiana State's oddly the opposite. They kind of feel like when our conference teams are on the bubble, like, oh, their metrics are good, but they don't have many great wins. So
right.
I think they're just right there in the mix with those other teams, and it's really just going to come down to if the other bubble teams pull off some upsets or if they all lose the games they're supposed to, that probably creates room for them to slide back in. So I really, obviously, it's nothing they can control at this point. Right. I think they're sitting back and rooting against every bubble team they can for the next couple days.
Yeah, so then bringing up another team we've talked about previously, Loyola Chicago, tied for the regular season title in the A-10, but as I believe we discussed before, they're nowhere near an at-large picture. So they've got to go and win their tournament. But and correct me if I'm wrong, Dayton's in no matter what they do, correct?
Yeah. Yeah, Dayton in no matter what. Loyola Chicago, unfortunately, they could probably get a decent seed if they were to win it, but they have to win it to be in.
What about Richmond? Are they in the same spot as Loyola?
Richmond would have had a slim at-large chance if in their very last regular season game didn't just get their doors blown off by George Mason. I would have said they were probably in the same boat as Loyola, but maybe could have made it had they made the final and lost to Dayton. But with ending their regular season with a loss like that, now I think they are in the same boat as Loyola as well.
Okay, so then that leads me, and I'll give up the mic in a second. That leads me to a related question to this. So I would say that either Loyola or Richmond would probably rate as two of the most realistic bid stealers out there, because right now you're assuming the league gets one bid, Dayton. If one of those two schools were to win the A-10 and they tied for the regular season title, so they're very realistic possibilities there, that would mean the A-10 gets two bids. Is there anybody else out there that you've got your eye on in particular as a similar kind of bid stealing candidate?
See, this has been the weirdest year of doing bracketology in terms of bid thieves, because the way I do it, most bracketologists do as well, is we always project the AQs as the conference leader or the team who won the regular season. So this year, if you're looking at the current bubble picture, there's actually the potential of bid gifters, if you will, because right now I have Richmond in my projected field, almost projecting that there's going to be a bid thief out of that league. So flip side, really, if Dayton does end up winning the league, instead of removing a spot from the field, that's actually going to open up a spot for a team like Indiana State.
Gotcha.
My first team out of the field.
So you're assuming that happens in the A-10, which makes some sense, because if you say there are a clear top three teams, two of them are of the bid thief variety, then, you know, that's a reasonable assumption to make, right? That one of those two is likely to win it.
Absolutely. And I mean, I'm not confident that Richmond's going to be the one to do it, but I think it's more likely than not that someone else wins the A-10 tournament, not Dayton. So I think it's realistic to show the A-10 as a two-bid league right now, because it more than likely will be. And the American Conference is in the exact same boat. South Florida, won the regular season in the American, but they're not going to get an at-large bid. FAU is almost certainly going to get one. So that's another one where I'm projecting the American as a two-bid league right now. But if FAU were to be the team who won that conference tournament, suddenly that opens up yet another spot on the bubble. So, yeah, this year we have some bid gifters to watch out for, even more than bid thieves.
And you still feel confident with the Mountain West six bids? They're just going to be all sort of middling.
New Mexico is now squarely on the bubble. I'm not going to say I'm confident with them anymore. Just because after that loss to Air Force, which was just terrible, they haven't picked up a single another quality win, and just other teams keep passing them. They're now my last team in the field, and I think they're going to have to get a quality win in the Mountain West tournament to make it. They would play Boise in the quarterfinals, who's one of the ones I have in. Beat them, New Mexico, I think you're in. But not, I think the Mountain West is probably going to have to settle for five, unless they have a bid thief, where UNLV is a very clear possibility of that.
So I'm curious how the process works when it comes to these lower, you know, rated leagues. like Oakland, for instance, just as we mentioned, they just punched a ticket and they're going to go. Interestingly, Michigan State played Oakland, James Madison, Indiana State. I mean, they played a lot of, in the non-conference, a lot of tournament teams. I mean, they're not, you know, as, you know, major league, major teams. But how do you figure out an Oakland as a 14 versus a 15? And how do you determine that? Is it all just based on net that just pretty much just lines up where they end up as far as the seeding?
I would say it more for those teams comes down to not the net, but what their predictive metrics are, like their BPI and their KenPom. Okay. Because a lot of their resumes often wind up looking very similar in terms of wins and losses. So you almost trust the predictive metrics to sort them out. Now, on the flip side, you see a team like Oakland, though. I think the reason that they're actually going to probably be a 14 and maybe even have a chance for a 13 is they actually do have a couple of quality wins. They won at Xavier. Their win at Youngstown State is actually a Q2 win. The Xavier one is Q1. So, yeah, oftentimes those low major teams don't have any wins of note. So when you're one of those teams and you have a win like that to hang your hat on, that can make a big difference. And, yeah, and Oakland not won at Xavier, they're probably looking at a 15 seed right now. But with that win alone, when you're looking at those other resumes that just aren't very good, that stands out and could bump you above the rest.
So kind of a general question, given that you're right now at crunch time. How long have you been doing this? I don't know if we ever asked you how many years.
Yeah, this is, I think officially I've been doing it with the website for 6 years now. Five if you don't count the COVID season, but obviously I was keeping brackets throughout all of that. But even before that, I was always just kind of doing this for fun, just not really putting it out there. Like I
so
would
a
just
long time.
Then watch the selection show and see like, oh, this is where I thought that team would be or vice versa. And oh, I got that one right. Lenardi didn't. But yeah, well, I really started like taking the seriously, creating the Twitter account, creating the website about 6 years ago.
Okay. So my question is, and you're not going to get a verdict on this year until Sunday. So this answer is a little premature, but you at least know where you're at as compared to the same point in time in other years. Do you find that it's getting any more difficult to do this?
If anything, I feel like ever since I know people have had a bunch of complaints with the net and the quad system, but I feel like ever since that's been implemented, it's kind of made the committee's process and what they evaluate a little more clear, actually. So I think the last couple of years of doing this, it hasn't felt like quite a shot in the dark at times that it has way back when I first started doing this. So I would say it's starting to get easier. And then maybe also that's just because I've done this for so long now.
Sure.
I'm just starting to become more comfortable with it as well. But I think just there's so many more data points than there used to be. The selection committee is a little more transparent. So I think it's just kind of become a little bit easier in that sense as well. It's still not easy. It's I'm ranked number one. I'm still going to miss several, but yeah, it's definitely just a little bit more clear than it used to be, for sure.
And you would say that that's holding true both for analyzing who's in the field, who's out, as well as trying to peg seeds? Because the reason I'll just share the reason I ask this. I mean, it's been my belief that ever since we've added NIL, but especially the portal, that we've created a situation where you don't have the same level of consistency with the vast majority of teams. And that's why I was kind of figuring on last year's tournament looking the way it actually did when it played out. I'm just curious. So you're not, that's true for, well, I could definitely believe it in terms of who's in, who's out. But as you're saying, you think it's been a little easier even on in terms of identifying particular seed lines for teams?
Well, I'll say this. You're right. Teams have been a lot more inconsistent lately. And in that sense, it does make it a bit more difficult. And again, that's just because of what the resumes look like. I mean, if I had all the information I had now and teams were more consistent like they were a few years ago, I think then it'd be a win-win. Then it'd be easier on both facets. So,
right.
Yeah, like with the NIL and teams just kind of in the transfer portal and teams just being a lot more inconsistent and having like a weird win that they don't expect and a weird loss they don't expect here and there even more than usual. In that sense, it definitely makes it tougher, but just in terms of how to evaluate a resume in general, I think that has become a little bit easier.
Okay.
Well, I guess, are there any other interesting things? I mean, I guess for Michigan State, we can just look at your last four in and the next four and cheer against those teams in their conference tournaments, essentially.
Exactly. And just in case.
Yeah. Is there anyone outside the field that you think you believe has a chance to get in who's just like, you know, who has a run in them, I guess I would say? Because looking at your next four and your first four, all the teams are active outside of Indiana State. I think everybody else is waiting for their, because they're all major conference teams with large, I guess, Providence, but that's still a pretty big
That counts.
Conference. Yeah, that's right. So is there anybody out there that we need to keep our eye on, or do you think that's the field? Or do you, I guess the question too is there a big gap between those last four and the first four, or is it pretty tight as usual? Because I think it usually is, but I get the impression that Michigan State is sort of safely in because the other teams are just below them, are just quite a bit below them.
Yeah, I would say it's very tight. I would say there's kind of a gap if you look at my last four byes. There's Michigan State, TCU, Seton Hall. I think those three are all pretty safe. And then those last five in and first five out, I could really see any of those five probably making the field. Like right now, outside of the field, I have Indiana State, Texas A&M, Villanova, and then Wake Forest and Pitt who would play each other. And I think any of those could absolutely find themselves sneaking into the field by Sunday, and I might even have them in myself on Sunday. So, like Wake Forest and Pitt, they play each other. That's a good win for either one. And then they'd play North Carolina, which wouldn't be a bad loss. Winner that game could be in. Villanova gets a chance against Marquette with Kolek potentially still out. Win that one. I mean, committee might not value it as heavily with him out, but that's still a great win. That could get them in. And then A&M, I was in Indiana State. I was very close to putting those two in today over Virginia, New Mexico. So yeah, if anyone listening is going to check out my site, I would say the last five teams in and the first five out. If you disagree anywhere there, I'm not going to argue with you. It's hopefully just becomes clear over the next couple of days.
And that actually brings me to one other question. You mentioned the injury to Kolek for Marquette. They've always said in the past that if you lose someone important later in the season, and then they sort of evaluate the team differently, the selection committee, they're obviously, I can't imagine they're evaluating every team on injuries like partway through the season that someone's out for 4 weeks. And I mean, do you think they wait more heavily at the end of the season? Do you think it makes a huge difference, or is it just like the only, if it's like, you know, making in or not making in, you're like one away. This is the one separator. Is that sort of how you see it actually being used?
They definitely factor injuries in. I would say it's going to hurt you a lot more if you lose someone that's not going to play in the tournament. Like Kansas is a prime example. Bill Self is saying all his guys are going to be healthy for the tournament, but there's some serious speculation about that. And I mean, what coach isn't going to say that? If they lose to Cincinnati tomorrow in the second round of the Big 12 tournament and just look bad without several of their stars being healthy or playing, they might drop to a four just because the committee is like, we don't know what this team's going to be when it starts. And we don't want them looking bad as a three seed right out of the gate. So, and then in terms of like injuries like Kolek, I'm very confident he will be playing in March. And it seems like he's close to return already. So for Marquette, maybe you lose to Villanova, but you know he's going to be back. They might not punish that win quite as hard and might keep Marquette as a two seed. And then also, when you talk about losses early in the season, really you're just going to get that injury consideration if you had like a really bad loss without one of your stars. Like Mississippi State, they lost a Q4 game without Tolu earlier in the year. And I'm banking on them saying, well, that was a Q4 loss, but they've been a lot better since he came back. Now, since then, they've lost four straight, so maybe they're starting to lose a little bit of that injury recognition. But before then, I was thinking they're almost going to ignore that loss. But now they're starting to lose a little bit of their grace there.
All right. Well, I don't have anything else. Do you have anything, Ron?
No, I think we're good.
All right. Well, I just want to remind everyone, since I kind of held all the sponsors back to the end, to check out our three great sponsors of the show. There is the Brothers of Just You Gutters. It is spring. It rains up here just like it rains down there in Texas. You may want to make sure you have good gutters to take care of all that water so it doesn't cause any damage. Actually, I was at my foster son's house today, and there's a lot of water in his basement. We're still trying to figure that out. So you want to make sure that taken care of. Again, for all our sponsors, you can go to thefinalfourisontheschedule.com/support. You can find the links to get access to them. 10% off if you mention Final Four when you get their stuff. Also, the Squeegee Squad of Grand Rapids. If you need to clean the glass on the floor, you also need to clean the glass of your house. So make sure you get the Squeegee Squad to take care of that. They can also power wash your house. Whatever you need done, they do fantastic work. And finally, Nudge Printing. For all your apparel needs, whether it's Michigan State or other teams like Texas State, Indiana, whomever it might be, Wildcats, right? So check out Nudge Printing at nudgeprinting.com. They also provide all the prizes for not only the Beat Rod contest, but also the bracket challenge that's coming up in just a few days, which is hard to believe. I cannot imagine trying to fill the brackets out at Michigan State beyond there. It's been so long. I just don't even want to think about it, but you can't help this season. It's just been kind of frustrating. So check that out. 20% off if you mentioned Final Four at the coupon code at checkout. So until next time, Final Four is on the schedule. Go Green.